PMS, pregnancy, menopause. Being a woman is a lot. Olly supports you and yours with expert solutions for every age and life stage. They just launched two new products exclusively at Walmart. Period Hero combats bloat, mood swings, and more during PMS. And Balance Perimeno to support hormonal balance, mood, and metabolism during perimenopause. Grab yours at Olly.com.
Olly!
These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
My guest today is Phil Kohler. He's here to talk about his review of Dark Souls 3. My name is Justin McElroy, and you're listening to Polygon's Quality Control. Phil Kohler, the original. Welcome back to the program.
Hello. It's been a while.
Original Phil, they call him.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was the first guest. Shadow of Mordor. I'll never forget.
One kill Phil.
That's one what kill I, Phil.
Because I kill all the bosses on Dark Souls on my first try. Never died. Never died at a Dark
never
Souls
died.
Boss.
Phil, you reviewed Dark Souls 3, which I've never reviewed a Dark Souls game. but I gotta imagine that's gotta be lonely work, huh?
It's a big ask. So I actually asked to review this because I have now reviewed every one of From Software's Souls games, not including Bloodborne, considering that is not Souls, it's kind of like a spinoff, right? But I reviewed Demon's Souls way back when for Game Informer, and I reviewed Dark Souls 1 for Game Informer, and now I've reviewed Dark Souls 2 and 3 both for Polygon.
What's the experience of that like? I mean, broadly speaking, what's it like to review one of these things without the resources? I know this is sort of a unique case because it was released earlier in Japan, and I don't know if you dipped into some of the available, you know, I'm sure there are tips and tricks littering the internet at this point.
Yeah, there were a couple of cases where I, you know, checked out what people who are playing the Japanese version had to say about, you know, how to deal with a certain boss or how to progress in a certain area. For the most part, so the way that I've approached it in the past, with Demon's Souls, I was playing post-release, so there was already that community out there, and I kind of realized that part of the joy of these games is interacting with people, right? It's working with a community to figure out what's going on and to like find secrets and stuff. These aren't games. The fun of these games is not playing alone.
Mm-hmm.
So with Dark Souls 1 and Dark Souls 2, in both those cases, I kind of got together a big mailing list, like an email list of other people who were playing pre-release, whether that was people within, you know, the publisher organization or other journalists. And we just kind of would email back and forth and be like, oh, did you catch this crazy secret? Did you go to this place? With Dark Souls 3, I thought I was going to do that same thing, but I ended up not really needing to for two reasons. One, because as you mentioned, the Japanese version is out. So there were already people playing and talking about it. So I kind of had that if I needed it. But two, there's just not that much to the game. It's a lot more straightforward in my estimation than previous Souls games have been.
Mm-hmm. Interesting question here from a listener, Peter, who says, when lamenting the game didn't have enough path to explore, do you worry that you simply may have missed it? Like it's too well hidden. When one of your criticisms is, hey, this doesn't have enough sort of like off the beaten path stuff or offshoot stuff or secret stuff or whatever, is that a worry that maybe you just like didn't find it? Maybe it's just too well hidden.
Yeah. You know, I mentioned in the review that I found lots of secrets. I'm sure there are a ton of secrets that I didn't find as well. So I'm absolutely positive there's stuff that I missed. The overall concern that I had is not even necessarily that there aren't enough secrets. It's that the stuff that is there isn't that deep or interesting. Like there are so many side paths that they split off from your main path, and then they go maybe a couple of feet and then end, and that's it. And maybe there's like an item there. Whereas I feel like so many side paths in Dark Souls 1 and in Dark Souls 2 and even in Bloodborne would spin off for like, you know, 20 minutes mm-hmm. and then end. It felt like there was so much more hidden behind them. I will say there are three major hidden areas that I found in the game, three areas that are off the beaten path that lead to, you know, full like extra like zones and bosses. So, I mean, there is that, like that stuff is pretty cool. But there's just the overall structure of the world is more of the concern, not necessarily that there weren't enough secrets, but just that, that the paths themselves were very shallow, I guess is the best way of putting it.
You have, like you said, reviewed all the Souls games, however you want to interpret that. When you put this review up, and I assume it's probably the lowest score that you've given one of these.
It is, yeah.
What was there a concern on your part? I mean, did that bring with it some amount of anxiety? And how has seeing other reviews pop up at a little bit higher than yours? What has that been like today?
Yeah, I mean, there's always anxiety from a reviewer's perspective. I think you can speak to this as well, Justin. There's always that anxiety when you're putting out a score. And well, for one thing, you know, we're putting out our score before we've seen everybody. So a lot of times we will get accused of like, oh, they just went with a lower score to stand out. When the truth is, we don't know what other people are going to give it. For all I knew, everybody would be giving it a lower score than me. I didn't know. But there's always that concern of like, you know, am I being too critical? Am I going to like just get hounded by people? Am I going to get, especially with a fan base as passionate as Dark Souls, am I just going to get dogpiled by people who are upset that I gave it, you know, a score that's lower than they wanted? Wherever that is in relation to other reviews. But at some point, like as a reviewer, I just have to like get past that concern and stick to my guts on what I'm actually feeling on the game. Actually being critical on it. I have read through quite a few of the other reviews out there. And I mean, I wasn't shocked to discover that I was one of the lower scores out there. But
what
I was
do you attribute bit, that to, Phil? Like, what do you after reading the other reviews?
Well, I think this is hard to say in a way of like, I don't want to shit talk other reviewers. I don't want to, suggest that anyone else isn't doing their job or anything.
Well,
like
no,
that.
It's all. I mean, it's all completely. I mean, and, to even say that is like. I mean, that's not what this is about, right? Like,
yeah,
you cannot be wrong. It's literally just like different sort of approaches to the same stuff. But
absolutely. So I think though, from reading other reviews and just, this is just a general feeling I've had about this series for a while. The Souls series it's this weird mixture, right? It's totally different from almost anything else out there because it is a series that has grown to mainstream popularity or fairly mainstream, more mainstream than you would expect, but it's incredibly difficult, incredibly challenging, mechanically challenging in a way that isn't usually popular in the mainstream and isn't usually popular amongst reviewers. I think there is a general anxiety amongst reviewers of Souls games of like, it's a hard series to critique.
Mm-hmm.
It's a hard series to come at and to actually say something critical of and to say something new about as well. Like, I mean, you can look over a lot of reviews, and this is true of my reviews of some of the older Souls games as well. And they follow the same beats, right? It's those same beats of like, this game is so difficult. It's really hard, but also it's really good. It's not hard in a bad way. And it's just kind of hitting those same points. So I think a lot of reviewers, especially if you haven't been reviewing the series from the start, struggle to break out of that mold.
Phil, I'm going to take a quick break to tell you, you and anybody else listening, honestly, everybody, this is equal opportunity.
It's mostly for me, but everybody can hear it.
Right. It's mostly for Phil. As in all things that I do in my creative life, it's mainly for Phil. But I want to tell you about Loot Crate. If you're a fan of pop culture, geek, gamer gear, whatever it may be, you're going to want to check out Loot Crate. This is a monthly subscription service. And for less than $20 a month, you're going to get 48 items that include licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, unique one-of-a-kind items, and much more. So if you want to get it on, you don't listen to anything else I say. Don't worry about it. Just trust me on this one. Go to lootcrate.com/control and enter code control to save $3 on any new subscription. And it's more than a subscription service. There's a whole group of people that are sharing their experience with the crate and interacting with each other. They say Loot Crate guarantees $40 of value in every crate. And sometimes it's a lot more. There's cool t-shirts, toys, all kinds of cool stuff. April's theme is Quest. So you're going to get stuff from Labyrinth, Harry Potter, Uncharted 4, History Channel's Vikings. And then there's going to be an exclusive t-shirt also in there, all built around the theme. Now, remember, you only have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive that month's crate. So if you want this one with the Labyrinth and Harry Potter and Harry and Uncharted 4, Uncharted, that's not a thing. Uncharted 4, if you want the crate with all that stuff, right now you're going to go to lootcrate.com/control and enter code control to save $3 on a new subscription today. Phil, I want to get into some more of these listener questions here. This is an interesting one from Xander, who the first experience he's had with the series is Bloodborne. And sure. He's kind of curious, like, what, and I assume there's probably a lot of people in that. Bloodborne did really well. I'm curious sort of like what changes, what differences people can expect if they're coming from Bloodborne into Dark Souls 3.
So I've had a bunch of people ask this. I've actually had some people, quite a few people ask if, you know, if I think that the problems that I had were stuff that was carried over from Bloodborne. Mm-hmm. I think this will probably be a controversial thing to say, but I think Bloodborne is a stronger game than Dark Souls 3 overall. And I think that a lot of the world building stuff and the sort of complexity of the world is better in Bloodborne than it is in Dark Souls 3. That said, Dark Souls 3 does take a lot of cues from Bloodborne in terms of the feel of the combat. So, you know, a lot of the criticism of the Souls games early on was that the combat was a little bit slow, a little bit floaty. Mm-hmm. And Bloodborne kind of changed that. It made things a little more action sure. oriented. It focused a lot more on dodging. You couldn't block really at all in Bloodborne. So you can block again in Dark Souls 3, of course. You can use a shield. I did use a shield for most of the game. That's my preferred play style. But wimp. Dodging is – yeah, I am a wimp. It's true. But dodging is much more effective and really necessary. And some of the later boss fights in this game get just brutal in ways that I found really entertaining and satisfying. But you need to dodge, and you need to dodge like perfectly. You need to like perfectly just zoom past the third part of this boss's combo so that you can get off one hit. And in that respect, I think it feels very Bloodborne-esque.
That sounds miserable. I'm sorry. I actually liked Dark Souls 2 and Bloodborne, but sometimes when you like hear about Dark Souls in the abstract, it just sounds like the worst. Well,
it's one of these things where you know, I'm working last week to finish the game. I'm on the final two bosses. The final two bosses of this game, I think, are some of the hardest bosses in any Souls game. Some of the most demanding, I should say, most mechanically demanding. And I am just Jeanette. My significant other is here, and my son is here, and they are watching me die and swear up a storm, and then my significant other reads my review later and is like, wait, you said these two bosses are great and that you love them. That's not what happened. I was there. And I'm like, well, it's a weird thing. It's a complex weird relationship.
So the big mechanical, like I would say the biggest mechanical difference in the meta game, well, not the meta game, but the outside of like the moment to moment combat was the addition of the ability to teleport between the different fires in Dark Souls 2. Is that back? And are there any other changes like that? I know you mentioned the weapon skills system. Any other sort of big changes for Dark Souls 3?
I wouldn't say big changes, but lots of little ones. You definitely are still using bonfires to warp between bonfires. And that kind of, again, plays into the sort of linear nature of the game. Because the areas that you're visiting don't really wrap around back in on each other in the way that they did in Dark Souls 1. You kind of need to do the bonfire warping because just walking between each area would take forever. Also, like in Dark Souls 2, you have to warp back to and like in Bloodborne, you have to work back to a central hub area to level up. You can't just level up at any bonfire. As far as other small changes, the focus points, which is the new sort of resource that you have to manage, that's basically like magic points in other games. They're used to determine whether you can do your weapon skills, which is a new thing that all weapons have. But they're also what you use for spells now. So you're no longer limited by the number of charges that your spell has between bonfires. It's just how many focus points you have. So that's a fairly big change if you use magic in the series at all. And then in addition to that, you can now split your Estus flasks between flasks that restore your health and flasks that restore your focus points.
How does that? You know, how does that work for you? Is that a positive change or neutral or negative?
I like that whole system. I think it just adds another, it's another layer of strategy. It's another strategic choice that you have to make whenever you're at a bonfire. You know, do I warp back and switch my Estus flask? If you're having trouble with a boss, you end up having to hit these points where you're like, okay, do I need to start using weapon skills better? Should I go get some of these Ashen Estus Flasks that restore my focus points so that I can use more weapon skills or more spells? Or should I throw all of my flasks into the regular healing flasks so that I can just tank as much damage as possible and hope that I survive long enough to kill this boss? The game forces you to kind of make these really interesting decisions all the time in terms of the combat.
Looking ahead to the future, are you going to be disappointed if we get, you're at E3 or whatever the big game show is at the moment, and you hear about, you know, Bloodborne 2 or Dark Souls 4 or what have you coming next year? Are you hoping for a little bit of a break here? Do you think that's the right move?
I think it's tough. I think a break would be in the best interest of From Software and in the best interest of the people enjoying their games, just to ensure the most quality for whatever the next game is. I fully expect that we will see a Bloodborne 2 announced at E3. Mm-hmm. My hope is that maybe what they'll do is announce it, but it will be for like fall of 2017 instead of spring. So we'll get at least a little bit more time to just polish and build and do all those other things. We'll see. I'm fascinated by From Software. I mentioned this in the review, but I'm fascinated by the ability of From Software to continue cranking out such massive games and such complex games. And it's endlessly impressive to me. I don't know how they're able to pull it off. So my hope is just that they can step back a little bit and give themselves a little bit more room. I think the biggest question for me is just going to be what happens with Dark Souls. Not so much what happens with From Software, because it seems like in all of the buildup to Dark Souls 3, From Software has been very vague about whether or not this is the final game. And I think the reason for that, if I had to guess, is that From Software wants it to be the final game, but Bandai is like, are you kidding me? No, we own the franchise and it makes a lot of money. So no, it's not the final one. So that, to me, that makes me wonder is like, if and when Dark Souls 4 happens, is it a From Software game? Or is it someone else?
Oh, Phil, that's a mystery that I can't solve, but perhaps in the future we'll get to the bottom of it, but one not day. Today. not today. Today, we are going to end this episode of Quality Control. I want to remind you about Loot Crate. Again, that address, lootcrate.com/control, and then use code control to save $3 on any new subscription. Try it for a month. I think you're really going to like it. We've got a ton more stuff on polygon.com. There's other reviews there. There's news. There's videos. There's everything you could ever want. It's at polygon.com. For Phil Kohler, I am Justin McElroy. Thank you for listening to Polygon's Quality Control. We'll be right back.